And good morning and welcome to Coffee with the Radio Ranch Wranglers here on the Scriptures for America Worldwide Broadcasting Network. We're coming to you live this first day of August 2026. We say welcome to you folks out there. And we've got Tim on the line. Good morning, Tim.
Good morning.
And we've got Will on the line. Good morning, Will.
Good morning.
Well, thanks for being here, guys. Tim, why don't you start us off with a word of prayer this morning?
Sure would. Dear Lord and Heavenly Father, we just come before your throne this morning, and we thank you for another opportunity, Lord, and another gift of another day to proclaim your power, might, and majesty. Lord, we pray that you would bring words, bring clarity, bring willing listeners and open hearts and minds, Lord, to the things that you want to be observed today. We pray that you'd bless this ministry, that you'd bless this outreach, Lord, that you would just guide and direct us, that you would also protect us, Lord, and your people wherever they might be, as we proclaim liberty and as we proclaim the truth and as we shine the light of God's word upon the dark deeds of the day, Lord, and also upon your blessings and upon your, as we praise your name in all of we do, Lord. That's what we are attempting to do here, to show the sovereignty of our God over the world. Lord, we just ask that this be done, and according to your plan and purpose, we thank you for it. We look forward to it. Thank you for the opportunity. In Jesus Christ's name, amen.
Amen. Amen. Well, where would you guys like to start this morning?
Have you all seen the video coming out of Spain?
Oh my goodness, that is crazy. And you know, at first I started watching that early in the morning. I think it was yesterday morning, and I thought, okay, this is AI generated. This is some kind of fake news that was. And then it just kept coming and it kept coming, and it's like everywhere you turned, you could see another video of it, and talk about an invasion.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought the same thing, Jason. I saw a meme of it, you know, on Facebook or whatever it was, Instagram, and I thought this is AI generated. And then all of a sudden, you know, it was the BBC picking it up and Sky News and these. And then I realized this is happening right now. And I think the numbers they're throwing out is something like 50 or 60,000 people. Well, I guess we should say what's happening. So, and I think I'm going to pronounce this right. It's Sota, I think, is the way it's pronounced. And it's this city-state on the tip of Africa, but it actually belongs to Spain. It's part of Spain. And it has been part of Spain for something like 1,000 years or something like that. And Morocco, which is Africa, those are Islamic Africans there in the Sahara Desert, is just below this. You guys have seen the video. Like you said, Jason, it's an invasion. All at one time, these guys started swimming onto the Spanish property there, the country of Spain, 10,000 at a time. I think they're up to 50 or 60,000.
I think I heard up to six. There was already over 60,000 of them there.
Yeah, it was a land invasion. I mean, Tim, what would you call it?
Well, yeah, definitely a rush. I mean, because the normal numbers were, you know, a few thousand. I mean, I guess it's kind of a noted crossing space that is a few thousand per week or month or whatever the date was, but it's basically they massed and rushed it, and they had several hundred drowning on the swim across and everything else. So when you look at it from that point of view, that's wouldn't you call that an assault?
Well, it's not. And for those that haven't seen the video, it's not women and children and families or anything like that. This is all military age fighting men. There's not a woman there. It's it is. I mean, these to me, it looks like soldiers. I mean, it.
Yeah,
and I think a lot of the at least conservative right wing Spanish commentators are saying the exact same thing, Jason. I think they're saying this is just a land invasion from these military age North Africans. Sorry to cut you off, Tim.
No, that's okay. I was just going to say, as far as real estate goes in this area, it's kind of a Strait of Gibraltar thing, which is
yes.
This is another Strait of Hormuz thing. I mean, if you look at some of this stuff going on with these Muslim invasions, and that's what I'm going to call it. But these are strategically placed. I mean, we're talking about areas in our world that are, you know, transportation areas or of significant military strategic importance. The Strait of Gibraltar was a big deal in World War II and in probably World War I. I just don't remember the details. But these are all, this isn't an accident, I guess. It's not like everybody got together over there and said, hey, man, we got to get out of here. Let's rush these guys, you know. So this is, it's a significant, it shows significant military planning and that kind of stuff. So we're back to that, you know, war on everything that's going on. This is not it isn't random, so, or coincidental.
Well, kind of a couple little tidbits to go along with that, as far as it being not coincidental. Early on, like within the first 24 hours of this event unfolding, there was a Spanish elected official. He was the transport minister. I guess he's kind of like the Department of Transportation for the nation of Spain. Yes. His name is Oscar Puente, and he came out and accused the state of Israel for being responsible for this, of giving aid and making this happen as punishment for Spain's stance on Gaza and what the Israelis have been doing there. And of course, you know, the Israelis came out and denied all of that. But just as a kind of another page that you turn, it's coming out now. It's being revealed that in 2019, Benjamin Netanyahu's son, Yair Netanyahu, put out on social media and some different things that the Israeli funding of non-governmental organizations to have SOTA, this area that the Moroccans have taken away from Spain and given to the Moroccans. So 7 years ago, Benjamin Netanyahu's son was openly discussing the takeover of the city-state and taking it away from the Spain so that the Moroccans could inhabit it.
Wow.
Now, I'll ask you guys, do you think that's a coincidence? Like you were talking about them, you know, like that is and then that begs the question of, this has come out about this little tiny city-state sitting on the tip of Spain, and you saw the influence and the meddling of the Netanyahus and the Israeli government 7 years ago saying, this is what we need to happen. We need to fund these NGOs to have these people invade. What do you think happened in America?
Wow.
What do you think has happened across the mainland Europe? To me, this is a smoking gun. Because if these guys were meddling and responsible in what's happening before our eyes in Spain right now, you look at every other country that this has happened over the last 10 years, and I bet you that same smoking gun is the one that fired the shot for those invasions too.
Yes. Yeah. There's, once again, we see this underlying, you know, it sounds like we're a broken record, but it's just the facts of the matter is every time you delve into it, you come up with the same underlying plot twist player manipulator, you know, going on here. So as I understood it back at the time in 2019, they were very unhappy about the fact that Spain was trying to get them to give up, what was it, Judea and Samaria. And, you know, and they're like, well, let's make a deal. You stop trying to get us to give that away, and we'll stop trying to get you to give away the Ceuta and Melilla, you know. So, and the thing is about that area over there is it's strategically important as a shipping point and as a choke point once again. And I think we're seeing this underlying possibility that the Israelis are out there trying to manipulate all of these trade routes, I guess. Let's just kind of call it that, and back to trade and everything else. And I think it's significant as well that Italy suspended Schengen with Spain. So Italy's worried about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is kind of a domino effect, you know, but Italy's saying, oh, wait a minute, we're going to suspend that. And for those who don't know what Schengen is, that was a treaty that was signed in Luxembourg, I think it was 1985, if I remember right, or something like that. And it basically allows for no border transport in the EU. I mean, it was done prior to a lot of that, but so suddenly, with all these invasions and all these bum rushes going on borders, it has become very important to suddenly have a border. So although we're told by a lot of liberal antichrist that borders aren't important, you know. So
I read, Tim, to go along with that, you know, in Switzerland's quite a distance from Spain, but they share a border with Italy as well. And my understanding is Switzerland, what would be early in our morning this morning, has done the same thing. Apparently, on that western border, they've shut it down. They're not going to allow anybody in their country.
What a concept!
Suddenly, borders do matter, I guess, you know. And, you know, I've really thought about this a lot just watching these videos of and folks. I mean, the best thing I can think of is if you go back and, you know, watch the first 15 minutes of Red Dawn, where all of a sudden, you know, it's just these invaders on the streets, you know, of a city. And remember in Red Dawn, it was the Cubans, right? So it was kind of Spanish-looking guys. That's essentially what happened here. I mean, just tens of thousands of people washed ashore within an hour. And there they are. And they're on the streets, you know, walking amongst these Spaniards, these Spanish people. Can you imagine that? I mean, and really what I'm thinking is, who in their right mind believes that this was just spontaneous?
Right.
Do you know the coordinated effort that it takes to move that many men into position to all at once cross? I mean, just you stop and think about herding cats. Imagine just amassing 60,000 people, Jason, like you were saying, 60,000. And to reiterate what Jason was saying, there's not a child amongst these people. There's not a woman amongst these people. So to round up 60,000 men and put them in a position, a relatively small position. I read that Ceuta, this place that they invaded, is 7.1 square miles.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't know that.
It's tiny.
Yeah, it's tiny. It is a tiny. And the influx of 60,000 human beings in that type of, geographically speaking, it's tiny. And to push 60,000 people into that, I read something. I essentially the 60,000 men without any arms, without weapons, just their physical presence is enough to take over the city. They're overwhelming as far as the numbers. Tell me how that's an accident. Tell me how that wasn't coordinated. Tell me there had to have been the logistics to move those men into position, and someone had to say now.
Yeah.
And green light that. I mean, it's a military action. There's no other way to say it.
Well, yeah, you had to get them there. You had to feed them. They needed transportation. They needed food. They needed water. And you're talking about, I just did the math, and if I'm not mistaken, that's roughly 8,400 people per square mile. That's a crowd, man. I mean, wow. That's just, that's nuts and bizarre. And the other thing is it's pretty obvious if you look at these pictures on the other side of, like, places, they're shock troops. I mean, they come in, they disrupt, they disorient. Just the fact that they're not necessarily armed doesn't mean that they're not being used as armed. You know, that's the other thing. Because they are, can you imagine trying to wade through 8,000 people per square mile in the event you need to get something done? How about water and food? And, it's going to get nasty quick, right? So definitely a shock troop.
Well, and I heard, and I'm trying to figure out how many people died actually in this whole deal too, but I heard it was 48 people that supposedly died, and they didn't say if it was who it was. You know, was it the invaders was it the people that were there when the invasion took place?
Right. And I would tend to think it was the people that were there when it took place, because if they swam across, how do they know how many they lost? They don't really know exactly. You know what I'm trying to
say? Well, and it's like, it seems crazy too that they didn't know that they were coming either. I mean, it's like all of a sudden they had stormed the beaches. They were there. It was like, you would think with that kind of, amount of people that they would have known ahead of time.
Well, and wouldn't there be some greater type of resolve involved? I mean, you know, what are you going to do? Hey, no, stop, don't come in, you know, blah, blah, blah.
I think you got to start shooting.
I was going to say there should be some type of escalation of force. Go ahead, Will, I'm sorry.
My understanding is the president of Spain, or whatever they call him, ordered the military not to engage them.
Yeah.
Now it bears to say that the president of Spain is actually a socialist, which is just communist light, right? That is my understanding, because I wondered the same thing, Jason. Is how why didn't the Spanish military, which does have a presence there, start trying to repel these guys? And the answer is, because they were ordered not to.
Okay.
That's why. Yeah, they were ordered not to. I guess they set up the balloon very quickly when they realized, in the first 2,000 started coming ashore, and they contacted Madrid, and the order came directly from the capital that they are not to physically engage with these invaders. I went back and double checked myself. Ceuta is 7.14 square miles, and before the invasion, the total population was 83,567 people. So they more than doubled in 24 hours. Or they about doubled in 24 hours, the population. Can you imagine that?
No, I can't.
You have the infrastructure, you have toilet facilities and water facilities, and, you know, the food supply, the food chain. For your population, can you imagine how critical the situation would be if you doubled within a day? How do you feed those people? You know, that is what a great way to, like you said, Tim, they may not have guns, but, you know, they may not be rolling in armored vehicles, but you can cripple a location just by that, because they got to eat. And I don't know. It's a new kind of invasion. I can't think of. Can you guys think of a time, even in the worst times that we saw during the Biden administration here in the United States and across the world, really? Do y'all remember this many at one time coming into a country, European country like that? It's massive.
Well, and can you imagine, Ben, if you were over there and you were on vacation? So I was looking it up, and this is that C2, however you say it. Anyway, it was actually a popular destination for tourism, and it was a really cheap place to go that you could stay in. It was a really nice, I mean, they had nice hotels and nice oceanfront properties and resorts and stuff like that. Can you imagine being on vacation there with your family and all of a sudden, you know, here come these invaders?
No kidding.
Yeah, you basically have people standing on every square inch pretty close, you know what I mean, or bodies everywhere. I mean, it's just I would definitely totally freeze all your infrastructure. I mean, as far as travel or communications or even, like Will said, toilet facilities, disease becomes a real problem real fast. You know,
that's right.
I mean, it's like,
that's right. Yeah.
So, and we've already talked about on here the fact that these illegal immigrants, they have tuberculosis, they have smallpox, they have all these different diseases that they're carrying around. So that's another biological warfare element? You know, I mean, makes you wonder.
Absolutely. And put on top of that, you know, my understanding is this little, like you were talking about, Jason, is a relatively peaceful place. You know, it was a resort, so to speak, location where a lot of people from mainland Europe would go to vacation. They had a very small crime rate, which means they have a very small presence of police force and that sort of thing. Can you imagine the amount of thefts that are going to happen as far as foodstuffs or whatever the case may be? And we know what goes hand in hand with these invaders when they go into these countries. So the conquest of, you know, raping the women and that sort of thing. You want to talk about a humanitarian crisis.
Yeah.
This very quickly, I think in the coming week or so, you're going to see a real humanitarian crisis. I don't know. My opinion is Spain will try to funnel these people into other places in Europe as quickly as possible, but we'll see. At least Switzerland and Italy, I imagine the other countries are going to do the same thing and probably say nobody from Spain comes into our country. So we'll see.
Yeah. It's interesting to me that, you know, we're going back to motivational factors for why they did this. Is it, you know, so terrible that they put themselves in this position, or it's, you know, to me, it appears to be a purely military motivated takeover. I mean, or along those, or they're simply, this is just a, you know, an invasion force, just like what's going on in the United States. And I don't know. This seems to be the modus, you know, the way that they're operating now. Their MO is to just shove a whole bunch of people in there and shock it out. And if nothing else, it creates confusion and pandemonium, you know, so, and isolates. That problem is the biggest problem that we've got to handle right now. So everything else is on hold till we get this taken care of. And it's a paralytic attack. Yeah. So that's what I see.
You use the term shock troop, and I really can you just the shock that the local citizenry experienced. You know, I watched just a few videos of one particular woman who was a Spanish, you know, obviously citizen there that lived there. She was dumbfounded. She was almost speechless, you know, of of not knowing what to do, because she was in shock. I mean, that's all there was to it. She was in shock. And something interesting. Did y'all catch the video of the, I don't know, there were about 20 guys that actually were carrying the Spanish flag that ran these invaders out of one neighborhood?
No, I did not.
Did y'all catch
no.
that?
I
didn't. Yeah, I'll see if I can find that and send it to you. There was one particular neighborhood where these guys were, you know, they're soaking wet and, you know, they got their shirts off because they've just swam across and they're coming into this neighborhood. And I guess it was like a impromptu neighborhood watch because there was probably, I don't know, 15, 20 of the local citizens there. One guy carrying the Spanish flag on the end of a flagpole, and they ran him out of the neighborhood. There was probably 200 or 300 of these invaders, and these 20 Spaniards ran them out, throwing rocks at them and whatever else they could find. Because they can't own guns. That's another one of those countries where they can't own guns. But they did. They ran them out, and I thought that was great. You know, at least that's somebody standing up. But like I said, that's you know, you look at the numbers. 83,000 is the local population. Probably half of those are women. I don't know how many children and elderly people. So, I mean, be conservative, probably 25 or 30% of that 83,000 is young, virile men able to defend their homeland. So you're talking about 30,000, 25,000?
I'd say at tops, yeah.
Yeah. And then you have 60,000, as you said, Jason, military age men that just invaded. You can't call it anything other than what it is. I mean, that's just a way to overwhelm the indigenous population of a location. And somebody ordered it. That's what I think. And when you start trying to figure out the why and the who, I mean, like I said, we at least have some documentation from 7 years ago who was openly talking about it.
Yeah, I know. And I tell you what, I went back and you sent me over that article of Netanyahu's son, all the comments that he had made. And it's like, I mean, it's really telling. Reading that, it's like this thing has been in the works for, I think it's been in the works for 7 years.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting that this was 2019, and I know I went and looked up the specs on. I was curious how this compared to illegal immigration, or I don't call it immigration, but illegal invasion in the United States. And roughly, you know, we're talking about, according to their statistics, we've had 2 million illegals come into the United States per year since 2019. That was where they started it. And that translates to 6,000, 5,000 to 6,000 per day. So, you know, we just have way more land mass here, but the problem is just about the same here, even though we don't, you know, it's been kind of what kept from us. But, 60,000 in one day is a big push, but definitely a statement. But anyways, it seems to be a, like I say, method of operation, you know, that they're using.
Absolutely.
I just, I'll throw this out just to, so people know. So this son of Netanyahu, Yair Netanyahu, the one that we're talking about with this this quote. Anybody want to guess at where he lives? Full time?
New York. I don't know.
Close. Yeah. Miami, Florida.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
That would be
his base of operation. Yeah. Well, that's New York South, right? So,
right.
His base of operation is Miami, Florida, and he has been a Florida resident for quite some time now. The guy is he's like 35 years old, and he has been in the United States since his early 20s. And he is a get this, this is so weird. He is an Israeli podcaster, but he podcasts from Miami, Florida. That's where his base of operations is. And so he, to my knowledge, he is not a dual citizen. He's just a citizen of Israel that's here with permission. But if you look at the guy, I like to know things, so I did the best I could with open source information. I'd bet you the milk cow that this guy is Mossad.
I think some of that. I'm pretty sure you're probably right. Yeah, no doubt.
Yeah. And he's here openly, you know, and if you look at his associates and who he runs around with, it probably would not surprise you guys that one of his best friends is Jared Kushner, Donald Trump. Yeah, father-in-law or son-in-law. And so Jared Kushner's, this is so convoluted. Benjamin Netanyahu's son that probably came up with the idea of what we're seeing in Spain right now lives in the apartment building that Jared Kushner's father gave him in Miami, Florida.
Oh, gee whiz. Okay. Yeah, that just keeps getting...
There's a deep, deep connection there. So it's crazy. But anyways, that's kind of off the point other than this just... It just stinks.
People wonder why you don't believe in coincidence, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's go to the phone lines. We've got a caller that's been on the line here. Hello, caller.
Hey, Jason. It's Tim.
Hey, Tim. How are you?
I lost my streaming, so I haven't heard you for about the last 5 minutes, but I was watching Lily Gaddis's podcast last night. She had a bunch of film from this thing you're talking about in Spain.
Yep.
And what the local police were doing, they were controlling the local people that wanted to do something about it. You know, you had people out that wanted to protest and this and that. And that's what the local police were doing.
Wow.
Looking out for the citizenry. Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Can you imagine what an invasion we'd have here if we didn't still have our guns?
Oh, man.
Yes.
No kidding, Tim.
Anyway, that's all.
Well, thanks for calling, Tim. We appreciate it.
Okay.
Have a good day.
Enjoy listening to you. Yeah, bye.
Yeah.
That is, you stop and think about what Tim just said and look at the invasion that we did have with our guns. Imagine what it would look like if we didn't have it.
Oh, man.
Maybe that's the reason it's not bigger all at once is because, exactly. Yeah. You kind of got to bring the pot up to boil slow here. You can't just turn it all the way up at once, though, for sure.
Well, I've long believed that part of the slow invasion or, you know, incremental invasion that we've seen is so that they have enough inside our borders so that when the massive invasion happens, we'll have enemies at the border and enemies within.
Right.
And it would be a two-front war. You know, I've long believed that. I know you guys have too.
Yeah, behind you and in front of you. Yeah, exactly.
That's right.
And we've talked about in the past how we've had these illegals in places of positions of secure enforcement, whether it be the military or law enforcement or different things like that. You know, it's like, how did they get that job? They're not even legal citizens. You know, I mean, so
yep.
Yeah, there's definitely they're definitely placing them in those positions for a reason. So, yeah.
And you put on top of it the bought and paid for politicians that, you know, we can guess at who's bought and paid for them. And, you know, there's an agenda there. And when it comes time to crack down in an invasion situation like that, would they do it? And, you know, I would believe that it's probably going to be like what Tim was just describing. Those that are in the positions to that have the power to protect, they will probably be taking the orders from those people that are bought and paid for. And, you know, their job becomes to keep the local population from killing the invaders because they want the invasion. It's a crazy, you know, there was a book written by a guy named Matt Bracken. And I actually think Matt Bracken is the smartest man in America. He really is. He wrote a book 20 years ago. He wrote a series of books. It was a trilogy called Enemies, Foreign and Domestic. And I think volume two of that trilogy, he described exactly what we're talking about, where in Washington, D.C., the politicians had been bought and paid for, and there were three generations of illegal aliens that had taken root in America that still flew their Mexican flags or whatever the case may be. And then there was an outright invasion. And it was all a work of fiction, but I mean it almost is like it's right there on the point of coming true. You know, I mean, it's right there. And the funny thing about it is just before the ground invasion, and interestingly enough, the ground invasion came from the southern border, but also the northern border. And at the time that he wrote these books, and, you know, now that I think about it, it's probably been 25 years ago that he wrote these books. You looked at Canada thinking, well, the Canadians aren't going to invade us. But look at the population of Canada now and the foreign nationals that are in Canada and the strongholds they have there. Anyways, right before this invasion was the Gun Control Act. The latest iteration of the Gun Control Act, and when that happened, that shoe dropped. The invasion came right behind it, and I don't know. That's all just fiction, but man, this Spain thing has really thrown me for a loop. I just can't. That is a lot of people. That is a lot of people at one time.
Yes, no doubt. And it's also another area of the world that has been thrown into upheaval. I mean, if we look around, doesn't it seem like they just keep at, oh, over here, and, oh, there, and, you know, I mean, there's all these geographical areas they just keep adding another one and adding another one. And,
yep.
You know, it's that brings the pressure points up, too. I mean, it basically leaves nations in disarray, and in the event of, for example, the United States thinking we're the world's police force, think how thin our resources become as a result of it. You know, I mean, you got soldiers positioned all over the place. You've got drawdown on weaponry and on ordnance happening all over the place and everything else. So it's another dilution of force through deployment to different positions in the world all over. So, that's strategic too. Yeah.
Let me throw this out at you, and just as a trying to make sense of this in the last 24 hours, I've been thinking about this as far as the land conquest and why would they want southern Spain, you know, like what other than the importance of Gibraltar, like you were talking about, Tim, and it may go a little deeper than that. And this is just my opinion, and I'm going to throw this out there. But in, you know, in 1492, I think it was 1492, or maybe I'm confusing that with Columbus. I'm trying to remember now, but I think it was 1492 is when the Spanish Inquisition happened, and that was the routing out of the Jews in Spain, and specifically the Sephardic Jews is what they were, the Mediterranean Jews that were really in Spain and in that area. and they controlled the shipping in those areas of like the Straits of Gibraltar, you know, that they controlled the commerce of the ships. And obviously, you know, it would come as a surprise to no one, but a lot of the banking of that time in that area, and they were routed out and exiled from Spain. And what you saw was a large population of the Sephardic Jews end up in places like Morocco, which is where these Africans are coming from, and Algiers, and some of those North African countries. So Libya, Morocco, and Algiers, they got a huge influx in about 1,500 of these Sephardic Jews, and they started controlling a lot of the commerce and the shipping industry there in North Africa. So fast forward 500 years, is this part of Greater Israel? Is that why Netanyahu's son was saying go and overtake this part of Spain? Is this the Sephardic Jew move of displacing maybe the local population because they look at that as theirs? I don't know. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, I don't think that's I certainly don't think that's too far from what could happen, and for some reason, I think they think that everything is theirs. You know, I mean, when you get right down,
100%.
Does it make money? Does it have you know, strategic importance? Then it belongs to us. You know, and it kind of takes you back to it goes right back into Esau, Edom. If you've done any study, and then you go back to Petra and those places, those were. That was one of the primary trading routes at that time, you know. So there you go. You know, I think it's legit.
Well, and they'll keep their hands clean, at least on the surface. You know, they'll use these low IQ North Africans to go in and break the system, and they'll be there ready to pick up the pieces and get their foothold back in there. I mean, that's my opinion. I'm not trying to speak for anybody else, but I think that's probably the playbook. There's no other reason, right? I mean, why now? Why so many? And why overwhelm them? And the answer is, to me, this is the same thing. You know, it's fallen out of the limelight. But remember, just a few weeks ago, we were talking about Moldova and Jared Kushner and that group of guys that were going in and taking over the town, the seaside resort town that they were going to build this massive resort. Do y'all remember that?
Yeah.
And that's kind of fallen out of the limelight, but this is kind of along the same line.
Yeah. Yeah, it's another resort area, you know, evidently.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'd be interesting to know who built that resort area up as far as where the money came from and what was going on with that, you know. So,
yep.
Well, moving on, one of the things that I've been thinking about, and I know this one of these next stories is something we're going to talk about, but it just seems like it seems like we are getting disarmed as Americans, as far as, you know, we're sending our weapons all over the place, our armament, and you know, there's just more handwriting on the wall, so to speak, about an upcoming invasion for the United States, and I think it's just you know, it's something that it's always in the back of my head, and I'm thinking about it. Is you know, what if that happens here, you know, and how could that happen here if we don't have the weapons to defend us, which we pretty much we've scattered them all over the world. You know, what do we have here to defend America against an invading force?
Well, there's certainly, you know, less than we did have, right? Yeah, by long ways. Yeah. I know they're saying that we just can't get enough weapons here. We're really running short. So I think we're.
Yeah, well,
that.
I mean, it's like, I mean, how we've just been in constant conflicts for how long? And it's like we're supplying How much stuff did we send over to Ukraine and that has went all over the place, and what we've used up in Iran, and I mean, that's just to name a few. Yeah. It's been a long haul of using up resources.
Yeah, and where did those weapons go that were left in Afghanistan?
Yeah.
The other question I have is, where did the ones go that we've been paying for the last, 20 or 30 years? Because at the rate of budget and everything else, there's basically no way we should be short. You know, I think that's if you want to do something, go do some searches and some looks on what the military budget is, the Department of Defense, the military budget, and take a look at the numbers on that. And they are, they're so big that they're just incomprehensible. So where'd all this money go? What did it buy? You know, I mean, I don't understand the shortages that we're facing or anything else, because we're spending roughly like four times more than any other country in the world, you know, than the next nearest one on just the military budget. So wouldn't that buy you twice as much ordnance at least as anywhere else? I mean, accounting for probably like R&D and stuff like that. But it's just like, I don't know. The money was, it's like it was a big money laundering thing. Oh, gee. Maybe it was, you know, but the point is it's not there. And well, we're out of missiles. I mean, we're out of, it's like, how can, we're supposed to have the best and the brightest up there doing all this planning and everything. And it seems to me like, they kind of didn't really get that accomplished. You know, what do you guys think?
I think since 2001, if you look at 2001 to now, so 25 years, and this is the power of the internet in real time, we've spent budgeted roughly $100 trillion on our military budget in 25 years.
Oh my.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a lot of money.
Yep. 90 trillion and some change. So that's, if you do the year over year budget since 2001, since 9/11, that's what we're looking at. That's I've actually never really thought of it that way, Tim. Is, you know, we always hear $3 trillion or $2 trillion or whatever, but when you look at it kind of an aggregate, that is an unbelievable amount of money. Yeah,
it's huge, and suddenly we don't have anything to show for it. You know, it's like what's the point? You know, as far as how does that work with, and there's all kinds of reports out. I mean, and basically I have to wonder if one of the in place here, my own, this is just total speculation on my part, but China's been kind of quiet through this whole thing. I mean, there's some saber rattling going on. There's not a lot being said, but it's just like, there's an article here that Iran is going to get Chinese shoulder launched missile systems in weeks. Not too much said to China about that. I mean, I don't know what's behind the scenes. Maybe there is, but I'm not hearing lots of political muscle or flex or anything on in those regards, but don't you kind of wonder if, as we continue to draw down our weapons supply and everything else, if there's not a... China hasn't really weighed in there yet with threats toward us in regards to some of this. Or maybe they have, but I haven't heard much. So
I don't think there's been anything directly. There's all sorts of accusations that are floating out there of, you know, China supplying Iran with intelligence and satellite assistance as far as targeting and that sort of thing. which wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I'm not, that's highly likely. So they are involved in this more than likely. But you're right. It's not at the forefront. It's not really being discussed. And, you know, these man pads, Tim, that you were talking about, that's not something for people listening that Tim Walz does up in Minnesota. That those are actually shoulder fired missiles. To my understanding, the reason why China has those man pads is because the Clintons gave it to them 35 years ago. And they've developed their own out of our weapon system. And so now they're supposedly making that delivery to Iran. And this is important. I mean, these things are, they're ground to air missiles that are designed to hit our aircraft. And, I mean, obviously they can be used for other things, but I would say that ups the game in that theater of war over there. But, you know, they've been successful without them. Iran has been successful. You know, you were talking about them, the amount of money that we've spent on the Department of Defense budget every year. You know, I thought about this week. We're told that it costs about $4 million per Patriot missile. That's the defense missile that we've put out all across the world. So every time one of those Patriot missiles fires to knock another bomb, an incoming bomb out of the air, it's $4 million. And Iran is defeating them with $30,000 drones. You know, the Patriot missile costs $4 million. It goes up in the air and it can't hit the drone, the $30,000 drone. And that to me kind of, tells the tale, you know, with all of our sophistication and all the money we're spending, you know, they're hitting at us with a fraction of the cost with some fairly low tech technology when you really think about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I kind of, Jason knows cause we've talked about it before, but I'm kind of a low tech versus high tech guy. It's like, high-tech is not always the answer. As a matter of fact, it seldom is, and usually it's not defeated by more high-tech. It's defeated by a low-tech device. You know, it's like, wow. So when we see these kind of things, their goal is to, and you got to ask yourself what the motivation is. Why do we need to throw another $1 billion at a high tech problem? Let's see how we can defeat it for, you know, 10 grand or something. I mean, is there some way, cardboard cutouts?
We can have high tech, at low cost or on a budget. And, you know, just the way that the technology has multiplied. And I mean, it's gotten crazy. It's advanced so much in a short period of time, and warfare has completely changed. I think that, you know, our enemies are using this, and it's like, how much are we actually, you don't hear anything about these big drone programs that the United States is investing in. You hear about them over in, you know, Ukraine and Russia and even Mexico. And we've got Mexican troops that have been over to Ukraine to train on how this drone warfare works. And, you know, I don't even want to call it low tech. I think it's high tech stuff, but it's budget. It's inexpensive. And I think it's going to be modern warfare.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like moving 60,000 people into a 7-mile landmass. To my way of thinking, that's a low tech problem.
Well,
but isn't really.
Good point.
What do you do with that? You know. So, and I'm not saying you're not right, Jason. I agree with you 100%. I'm just saying that there's this linear thinking that just because they threw a whole bunch of money at it, it's better. You know, and that's not always the case, is all. And or are they really throwing a whole bunch of money at it? I mean, does this thing cost $1 million to build, but we're saying $4 million in the case of the Patriot, because we need to make $3 million go somewhere else, you know? So I always liked that. There was a movie there where they were talking about money, and he said, well, how do you guys get this, afford this? And he said, well, you don't think a hammer costs $100,000, do you? You know, it's, that was such a...
I know, looking at some of the prices on some of that stuff, I mean, just chairs and I mean, stuff that it's like, is it really inflated? You know, if the government wants to buy it or the military wants to buy it, it cost, it has to cost 100 times more than you can buy it at a Walmart? I mean, seriously?
Yeah, exactly.
It just looks like a big money laundering scheme to me, too.
Yeah, that's what I think we're, and I think that's what we're seeing. And that light gets shined on it, and it just changes everything. You know, it's like, okay, that's what you guys are doing. And but I do think it's interesting that China hasn't had much to say about it. And if you think about it, Russia doesn't seem too interested in really the whole Ukrainian thing. Russia doesn't seem all that interested in really making stink with us. I feel like, you know, the quiet guy is the one you want to watch in the room sometimes. And
agreed.
I kind of think China's the quiet guy in this scenario right now. And that's just my opinion for what it's worth. But they're just waiting for the correct opportunity.
I know we're getting to the either the bottom or the top of the hour, depending on how you want to look at it. But I really believe if you look at this, especially with this week's meeting, you know, you had Zelensky and Netanyahu both in the White House with Trump. If you look at how this is shaking out, especially talking about China and Russia, Tim, I believe there is a real there's an effort by the enemy to link the Ukrainian-Russian war with the Iranian war. I really think they are trying to link those wars up to foment a greater war in the region. Because if you look at the partners in all of this, and I'm talking about like Turkey and Syria, you know, the alliances they have with Russia, and then what the Ukraine is doing with places like Poland and Belarus and that sort of thing. And now even with what's going on there in Spain, just, you know, got to remember Spain is a part of the European Union. I personally believe that they are pushing hard to make this a world war. And at the end of the day, I think we're in a world war. By proxy, right now, I think we are in a world war. We're watching it. It's just right now, as far as the United States is concerned, there's only one theater of war, and it's what's happening in Iran. But I think very quickly, with how they're trying to destabilize the Gulf region, by the end of this weekend, you may see Saudi Arabia actively at war in Yemen. Like that is, they've already exchanged some missiles. And I think there's a lot of rumor out there that Saudi Arabia may send ground troops into Yemen. If they do that, that's on behalf of the United States and Israel, because that's where the Houthi rebels are. And that prevents the United States and Israel from having to send in ground troops. And we can just point the finger and say, no, this is Saudi Arabia that did that. And that is how you see World War start, is by these proxies in the region. And it's an interesting time. I mean, we'll just have to wait and see what happens.
Good point.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we are at the top of the hour. We're going to take a break, but we do have a caller on the line, and I don't want to make him wait. So let's go ahead and take this caller. Hello, caller.
Hey, Jason, Will, and Tim. It's Miss Barbie.
Hey, Barbie.
Hi.
Hey. So thanks for the prayers, praise report. After y'all prayed for my pain to subside, it actually did subside quite a bit.
Hey,
so
praise
thank
God.
You for that.
Good.
Awesome.
And then with my children, we have definitely improved our, especially between my boys, communication and the love I want to see my children have for each other. So praise God on that one.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that with us.
Sure. sure. And then I have, if you don't mind, it is Monday that I go for my procedure.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. So I have a couple of little things. So on a domestic thing, like I just went by one in my truck, the flock cameras. So I made a funny thing to my younger son, who I told you was working towards being a gunsmith. I was like, hey, how about we say Glock the flock? He said, oh, Mom, now my boys do social media. And they told, my younger one told me that they're using lasers to disable these flock cameras, you know, the, like you were saying, low-tech stuff, like those little lasers that they will, you know, like they're pointing at the jet for a while there. Not that we would engage in any kind of hurting any government property, but I heard that people are, and it's disabling them. Which is kind of funny. So that was one. And then on the agriculture, I live in a very agricultural area. I think Jason even knows there's a lot of cows out here. But also there's a lot of growing. And there must have been just an estimate, because I went around a little bit right now, at least 400 acres I've seen of them tilling under the watermelons that grew, that they spent all that time fixing and growing, have been plowed under. And I've seen at least 200 or 300 acres of corn that was up, done, plowed under. So I don't know why these guys are plowing their stuff under. I remember they were doing it a couple of years ago. Maybe they're getting paid to do it. But, I mean, there's still a lot of stuff growing, but I've noticed a lot of these fields are getting plowed under. I don't know, maybe to foment their famine that they want us to have.
Interesting.
And then, yeah, so I thought I'd bring that up because I know you guys are interested in the ag stuff. And then the Kushners. So it made my antenna go up because I was listening to something silly. And that FIFA that just came to the United States, not that I even watch soccer or like watching soccer, but I do know it was a huge moneymaker for a lot of people out here in the United States. And so the president of FIFA, who sat with Trump at the final match or whatever, he was going to sell shares of FIFA for $20 billion to a company. And there's, like, a controversy about it. Well, guess who owns that company? Jared Kushner's little brother, Joshua Kushner. Yep. So these Kushners, I think we need to keep an eye on them. Jared Kushner reminds me of the character in the movie called The Devil's Advocate.
And he's just, that's a good analogy, yeah. Okay.
So the more I see what he's doing, the more I'm like, Al Pacino, let's move over. The real guy's here. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, so that's about it. Just getting some errands done. So we'll see how it goes.
Well, thanks for calling, and we'll be praying for you on surgery on Monday. So that's the third, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yep. And, keep us posted on that.
I've been praying for you all, too, so thank you again very much. Your prayers are much appreciated.
Well, we appreciate yours as well.
Yes, sir.
All right. God bless.
You, too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And the phone number is 970-224-4203, but we're going to go ahead and take a break. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, folks.
Now here's a song for all of you liberals who believe your ways are best, who don't mind overcrowding this nation with a swarm of foreign immigrants, who don't care about the population, who don't care if it's foul on our nest. When are you ever gonna read? We got crime overtaking our cities. We got gangs taking over our streets. We keep handing out more and more welfare, though it never seems to meet their needs. What kind of culture are we cultivating? One where you never have to pull any weeds. If we don't stop this immigration, this great nation's gonna fall. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time that we close up that gate. Now can't you see how we are rapidly becoming another third world fascist state? Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. How can we ever come to any solution when all we ever do is debate? We've got to get a tighter grip on our borders. We've got to seriously legislate and quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist and quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time we start closing that gate and quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist and quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration in these great United States. Let's get a grip on immigration. Now you know it's not too late. It's high time that we limit their numbers. It's high time that we close up that gate. Can't you see how we are rapidly becoming another third world fascist police state? Let's get a grip on immigration in these great United States and quit trying to fan the flame that I'm a racist and quit trying to fabricate that I hate. And get a grip on immigration in these great United States.
And we're back, and you're listening to Coffee here on the SFAWBN. Let's see. Well, what about this church that was historic church that was torched over in the UK? What do you guys know about that?
There's been a bunch of them.
Yeah, several. Right? I mean, it's an ongoing onslaught on historic landmarks that relate to Christian history. They kind of do that everywhere they go, right?
164-year-old. Wow.
That was the one in Lancaster or Leicester or whatever it was. In England, but if you look, there you go. Over the last, I don't know, few years, 2 or 3 years, there's been a bunch. I mean, I don't want to put a number on it, but I bet you it's been a dozen or more, maybe 20.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That have just caught on fire throughout the UK. But it's not just the UK. I mean, it's Canada as well. If you look at these areas in Canada, there's been several churches, historic Christian churches, that have burned in Canada really over the last few months. I know one, was it in Toronto, that caught on fire and was partially burned, and they managed to put it out, and within a few nights it caught on fire again and burned to the ground. I mean, it's warfare is what it is. And I mean, there are people in the UK that are speaking up, you know, prominent people now that are saying, call it what it is, you know, that this is targeted, it's targeting their culture, their Christian identity over there. And it's these blasted Muslims, these invaders that are burning these churches down, and very little is being done about it.
Hmm.
I know that since 2023 in France, they've had hundreds of churches burned over there that just don't make the news here. But, you know, so, and some of them aren't minor churches. I mean, they're, most of them are Catholic churches, probably because they have the most significant landmark buildings and facilities. But there's been some Anglican churches and stuff burned in. And there was one here just a few weeks ago that was massively huge. It was a really old one in England. I can't think of the name of it at the moment. But, yeah, this is an ongoing issue. And, I mean, remember here not too terribly long ago, it's been a few years back when there were, like, black churches and stuff being burned in the United States. Do you remember the outcry about that? It was like, oh, my gosh, it's a massive. And I'm not saying it was good. I'm just saying that. But this is going on, and there's kind of a very little being said about it. I mean, unless it's really a major landmark place. So, yeah, it's going on all the time. And kind of a side note on that was interesting to me was these Muslim churches, you know, I don't remember how many times a day they called the Muslims in these countries into, what do they call it, prayer or whatever. But, you know, they do that song call out thing from the top of the mosque. And have any of you guys read any of the decoded wording of those songs for the prayer?
No.
I mean, it's really eye-opening. It's basically prayers against the infidels and put to this, you know, whatever they call that. It's not really a song, but it's basically saying that they hope we die, that they hope our women die, that they hope our children die, and, you know, and everything else. I mean, it's crazy, though.
They're war cries.
That's what they are. Yeah, they're calling them into, yeah, it's when you, and they're not done in English ever. You know, they're done in their language. So most people have no idea what was being said. So I went and looked it up. I was like, well, what are they saying when they do that call? And it ought to make your hair stand on it. I mean, basically it's an incitation or an incantation for the destruction of Christian society. And they're pretty much all that way, as I understand it. It's not like, oh, it's time to pray or anything like that. It's all these invocations of their God for our destruction.
That it's called the Adhan, is the Muslim call to prayer of when they're singing these songs or whatever. And that came to memory, and I looked up the quote because I didn't want to misquote it. But going back to good old Barack Obama, you got to remember, this is also Barack Obama. This is the exact quote where he said, the Muslim call to prayer is the prettiest sound on earth at sunset.
Wow.
Wow.
Isn't that something?
That's telling.
Yeah.
And that's a guy who, you know, he said this from his time growing up in Indonesia, which is, one of the most populated Muslim countries in the world. And, but yeah, that was Obama's quote on that. But you're right, Tim. I don't know it word for word or anything like that, but I do know that they're just war cries is all they are. They don't resemble a Christian prayer in any way.
No. Well, and it's just, such a, and they're all about our destruction. So, and the general, if you do a general look at it, it doesn't sound, it sounds fairly innocuous, but, basically, the ones that are going out here aren't that. So, I mean, there was guys there listening to one, I think that was in Minnesota, and they were translating it directly, and it was just like, oh my goodness, you know, so, it's a serious thing. And basically, if you would be considered to be inflammatory if we published things like that, I mean, you know, it would be like, well, that's not nice, or that's not Christian. So, but they're not Christian. Anyways, it's very anti-Christian sentiment that is the context of that. So we're considered.
Yeah.
Another thing I want to do is I'd like to jump back for just one second to what you said, Will, about trying to embroil the world in that. I don't know whether this ever made it out. People may not have seen this, but Iran accused the Ukraine of a deadly attack on a Caspian commercial vessel in the Caspian Sea on the 25th of July. So, as I understand it, they use drones to damage and basically destroy a ship in the Caspian Sea. So, and it was a commercial vessel, not a. But it's that would be another incitement to bring, you know, that world pressure up for everything to get into it. But that, I was just going to throw that out there before we went to break. So that kind of I didn't want to run us off track, but I did want to throw that out there as another motivating factor. So
there was another, you know, several months ago too, there was a missile that was taken down in Poland. And it was a full court press to try to prove that it was Russia that had done this, that was firing into Poland, and they found out it wasn't Russia, it was the Ukraine. And the same thing just happened a few days ago as well, on the border of Belarus and Poland. And once again, it was trying to be proved that this was Russia firing into Poland from Belarus, and guess who it was? It was the Ukraine again. And I think it's the same sort of thing, Tim. They're trying their best to provoke mainland Europe into some sort of conflict with Russia. So, yeah.
Well, and we've got this big thing going on with the United States and Israel. I like the way they word that. I suppose that's part of the NDAA and the NIAA thing now. But supposedly, what major harsh attacks on Iran for energy-related targets. I'm kind of, you suppose there's any energy-related targets to attack in Iran yet? I mean, supposedly... I thought, according to some of the stuff I'd been reading, that we pretty much had taken care of most of their infrastructure, had been pretty much bombed or whatever. But there goes some more. There goes some more $4 million missiles or whatever. So,
I thought we completely crippled their nuclear making facilities too, Tim, 6 months ago.
Yep.
I guess that didn't happen.
Well, and I think we're continuing, kind of moving back toward home here. I think we're seeing, what about this flock stuff? You know, I mean, I think Barbie mentioned it on the call, but there's a lot of stink going on there, huh?
Yeah. You know, I thought about the flock thing and I wanted to throw this out. I don't know if this is a prepper tip or what it is, but I know a lot of people are talking about the big news story that's been viral is, you know, the people that are vandalizing these flock cameras and stuff. And I don't want anybody to get themselves in trouble. And, you know, that's not your property and you shouldn't be destroying things. But I did want to talk about this, that I don't know about you guys, but especially this time of year, in Texas, we have front-facing license plates and rear-facing license plates, and the bugs are terrible here. They're just absolutely terrible. These June bugs, it seems like they come around all summer. And man, I don't like a dirty license plate. So one of the things I have discovered is AMSOIL makes a product called Mudslinger. And Mudslinger is just this state-of-the-art, I can't even tell you what's in it. But you can spray it on your dirt bikes or your ATVs, or yeah, I put it on my chainsaws, and just with some compressed air and a little water, you know, it'll knock dirt and grime right off. The other thing I found out is it is excellent for ultraviolet protection, and it puts an almost invisible layer over metal, like a license plate. And amazingly, it also reflects any type of camera image, and you're not able to see it from a camera or anything like that. And it keeps your license plate just crystal clear. It costs about $14 a can, and you can spray it on there and just kind of wipe it off, and you can't tell it's been sprayed with anything. But I mean, like, If you take your phone and you kind of try to get a sideways angle at it or something, it just blurs right out. And I don't know. Everybody likes a clean license plate. I just thought I'd put it out there.
Yeah. Clean is keen. Yeah, no doubt.
There you go. Yep. And you're not destroying anything. You're just taking care of yourself.
Right. Yep. Yep. Well, and that's another, wow, there's all kinds of things going on in our, what about this?
There's another product called Rust-Oleum Reflective Coatings, and I watched a couple of YouTube videos on it, too, and you can get it on Amazon, and it's a pretty cool product. I was not aware of it, but it's, you can't see it, but it reflects light, and it's the same thing as they say that it beats it 100% of the time. And I know that Amazon sales have gone through the roof on it. People ordering it and, spraying it on their license plates. So
now, but when you say it beats it, you mean ultraviolet light, Jason. It beats like sunlight. Like
yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just making sure.
Yes.
So. Well, and here in Colorado, so it was interesting. So Wellington is a town just north of me, and they've got the flock cameras in there. So it's the sheriff's department is the one that had the contract. So Flock came in and gave them the first year of service and cameras for free for the first year, and after that, it was on a contract basis. Well, now it's complicated, but so the town of Wellington, they don't want to pay for it. They don't want to pay for these flock cameras, and people don't want them. Sheriff's Department does want them up there, and they've got quite a few of them up there. But the Sheriff's Department now, they want the town of Wellington to pay them for the flock cameras, and they don't want to do it. So they've imposed an increase in sales tax to pay for the flock cameras. Well, that is not going over very well with people up there. They don't want it more taxes, which, you can't blame them for that. So it is definitely getting interesting, and I know that these stories, there's just stuff going on all over the country. Every town has its in different battles with it. But I don't know. It's going to be interesting. One of the things that there was there's this guy out there, I can't remember what his name is, but he's got a channel, and it's just on the flock cameras. And he had came up with some really super extra gooey stickers that you can order from him that people have been sticking on the lenses. And I'm like you. I don't recommend. Don't vandalize equipment. It's not worth going to jail for. I've seen a lot of people arrested, watched videos of people, and I don't advocate that by any means. But there's definitely other ways to to protest.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. Passive protesting. Yes, exactly. I think that another thing that is interesting is that just came out. I've been following it myself, and there's a few things there that are of interest to me. One of them is that practically none of them are mounted according to DOT specifications. There's such a massive rush to put these up, and this is a big deal. If you mount anything along a traveled roadway or a controlled roadway, it has to be mounted in a way that is breakaway mounted on a concrete pad, so that in the event somebody accidentally strikes it with an automobile or a motor vehicle, that it doesn't impale someone or it doesn't create an additional safety hazard. They're saying that the majority of these cameras that they have gone around and surveyed are basically, they're just driven into the ground. You know, they're just a steel pipe. They're not mounted according. Now, if you tried that as a private business or even guardrails and stuff, there are fines involved with that and everything. There's a whole list of administrative procedures that have to be done to do that. Another thing that came out that was interesting to me on them is they have the capability proven now to collect. They collect metadata off of all the things like your cell phone and everything when you pass by them. They tie that into your profile or into the profile of that motor vehicle license plate and equipment. So that gives them access through that to different things like, text messages, internet history, and everything else. So, which, by the way, the Supreme Court has ruled that as a illegal search.
Yes.
So, yeah. Oh, sorry, Will.
On
go
the
ahead.
Geofencing. No. On the geofencing, like you were talking about, that was just ruled this last session of the Supreme Court that you must have a warrant to obtain that type of information. But something else, you know, it's not just to access your text messages or whatever. It also, they build profiles of who you are traveling because it is collecting every phone. So, I mean, if Jason, Tim, and Will were in the truck going wherever, they're going to collect that metadata, those cookies that are being dropped to the cell phone towers, and that's essentially what they're acting like, is they have a receiver, so to speak, like a cell phone tower that's extracting that data as you pass through, and it's in real time associating that license plate with the cell phones that are inside that vehicle. And I'll go as far as saying this, guys, that they are building, once again, this is why they have to have all these AI data centers, they're building a dossier or a profile on every license plate and the associated devices, including if you have a vehicle that is capable of, that's an internet-ready vehicle, so to speak, it's collecting that data because that's also dropping metadata as you're moving. And the reason why that's important is because even if you try to change your license plate, it's no longer going by the license plate. It's going by the metadata in the vehicle. So if you have a 2026 Chevrolet Silverado that's cell phone capable with the internet, all of that, that's what it's collecting now. And because you know, they're using it under the guise of, well, criminals change their license plate. And I'm not saying that they don't. So when they're telling you it's license plate readers, like what Tim is talking about, they're lying to you because it's not just a license plate reader. It's a complete data extraction device, that it's sucking up all the data that's available in the vehicle. So it's your kid's cell phone, your cell phone, the vehicle's cellular capability and internet capability. not to mention just the license plate. The license plate is what everybody's kind of ticked about, but that's really not what it's stealing from you. It's stealing everything that it possibly can, including the pictures of the facial recognition.
Yeah, and we already have a, for example, on these late model cars, I think it was Nissan, has a class action lawsuit going against it because it's using a data event recorder, a DER, inside the vehicle, and other vehicles are, you know, it's no difference across probably most brands and late models. They record all conversation inside the vehicle, the speed of the vehicle, how many occupants are in the vehicle based on the weight recordings and everything else. And so they would have access in some way to this. And the fact that it's been ruled illegal and unconstitutional doesn't stop them. I mean, it was illegal and unconstitutional for Nissan to do that, but they're still collecting that data and selling it to people, you know. And so, these are all things to be aware of. I mean, it's going on. No wonder everybody's upset.
Yeah, that's just crazy how much data they can extract out of that. And you think about it, you know, building those databases, it's, you know, and I'm sure it can pick up, if it can do that, it can pick up who you've been calling. So then it just, I mean, it knows all your friends, your associates, those. It's just, I mean, talk about an intricate web that they've.
Invasive.
So I just want to throw this out there, because what happens is, understand that these data collection devices are, it's not just the LPRs, and it's not just the cell phone cameras. The same things are occurring inside stores. And Tim, you may be able to more accurately speak to this, but some of these newer retail malls and stores or whatever, they're doing the same thing, where they are accessing your search history when you walk into them to know what you were looking for. I know that sounds crazy, but it's the truth. It is the absolute truth. Where this is all tied in as far as a nexus or a web is the ability, and I'll just use myself, if for whatever reason I'm on the map, I'm being sought after, that cell phone that's in your pocket, it will be communicating with license plate readers, cell phone towers, these retail kiosks that are picking up your data or whatever. And in real time, that's why these AI data centers exist, folks, that it's going to be able to compute that no matter where you're at. So that's not meant to be fearful as much as it's meant to be. You just need to know what you're carrying in your pocket. It's a data collection device. Tim, you were telling me something interesting about something maybe Walmart is doing as far as real-time price adjustments. I think it kind of ties into this.
That's part of this geofencing situation, and you can look it up and find out a lot more about it. But it basically, what they're doing, and ours is currently in process, I think. I mean, but they're going in, they're doing a big remodel, and on all of their major, what do you want to call it, end caps and purchase items, you now have a digital screen facing you with a camera on it. So when you walk up there to look at something, and they're no longer doing, you know, the little price tags on the edge of the shelves or on the items, these items are now priced in that scanner up there. They tell you what they are. And the idea is with geofencing is, as they continue to tie all this together, they'll be able to price it according to what you're able to afford to pay. So based on your social
so
media.
So if I'm black, it's free?
Well, there's a whole
That's
bunch
right.
of things like that that go on. Yeah. So, you know, like, but, There will be, it's called variable pricing, and that's the way they're going to.
I mean, that sounds like extortion. Is that even legal?
I don't know. That's another question I have about it.
It's social credit. I mean, we've heard a lot about the social credit scores in China. There's two-tier, three-tier pricing in China as we speak. One of the first things that happened was public transit in China, so that, you know, if you read the wrong thing on the internet that maybe was critical of the communist government, you may have to pay four times as much to ride the train.
Yeah, or it may not let you ride the train. Yeah.
Or it may not let you ride the train.
You can't buy this. Or what about if they keep in track of, like, okay, no, that's enough. You've already bought enough toilet paper for this 30 days, and you can't buy this product anymore. I mean, to me, it's more control.
Think about this. If you're on the internet and, you use toilet paper, for example, right? So you like to hoard toilet paper. And you've bought toilet paper from Costco, and you've bought toilet paper from Sam's Club, and you've had it delivered to your house, and then you go to Walmart and you're going to buy some in person, they're going to know your shopping history because that phone is in your pocket. And what you're describing, Jason, they just may say, you know what, you've bought too much toilet paper this month because we know what you've done on the internet. And we're either going to price you out of that toilet paper so that it becomes $20 a roll, or they just won't let the sale go through at all. And you can factor in, maybe we're not talking about toilet paper. You know, maybe we're talking about bricks of 22. You just bought too many bricks of 22.
Your quota has been reached.
Yeah. Too many canned goods. Regardless. Yeah. And the other thing is, it's not necessarily, as I've read through this geofencing stuff, it's not necessarily tied in. We think of it as our phone being the tether, but it's not necessarily, because they're using facial recognition. So you may show up, say you leave your phone at home, and you go down there, they still are going to use facial recognition in order to profile you for that. So, you know, back to the same
thing. Doesn't it sound like, we're living in a science fiction movie anymore? I mean,
pretty much.
Didn't they make movies about this like 20 years ago that we were watching that were like, oh, that's never going to happen?
And they even wrote books about it, you know, 1984, Logan's Run. I mean, I can think of, you know, several of them that were like, yeah. So, you can kind of see the tendrils of the web. I like that word, the net, you know, and they call it, the World Wide Web. Or getting, you know, the network or whatever. But the Bible said they lay nets for us, you know, to control us or to trip us up. I mean, it was like the Bible was talking about it. It just didn't have maybe the right to, or it did, but we didn't recognize it that way as the right technical term. But they're there. It's kind of like Skynet. You know,
you're
just like, wow, really?
Yeah, I was thinking about the Minority Report movie. I was looking to see when it was came out, and that came out in 2002, so 24 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, let me throw this out at you guys too, and it's just, I've been accused of being paranoid before, so I'll let you guys accuse me as well. But on your phone, you won't have to accuse me. It's true. I mean, you can. It won't be an accusation. So on your phone, you have a front-facing camera, and then you have a rear-facing camera. And we never really stopped and thought about the evolution of why would there be a front-facing camera, right? When did that even happen? Why did that happen? And it happened during the genesis of social media, Facebook and MySpace and all of that sort of thing. And they did it to monitor your eyes as you're scrolling, on your phone, of seeing what you're paying attention to and what you're not paying attention to. And if you've ever wondered, well, I didn't click on that, but it seems like every time I open up Facebook, this particular ad shows up or whatever. Well, it's because it's watching your eyes. And it's done for that purpose, because it's stealing your very thoughts.
of what you're interested in and what you're not interested in, and the algorithm changes in real time so that only the things that you showed interest in are showing up, because it gives you more the ability to buy something or to engage in commerce on that product that you like or you don't like. The other side of this is, understand when you give permission on your phone for your camera or your microphone or whatever, like what Tim was saying with Nissan, it's recording all the time. And when you are buying that extra box of whatever, you know, if it's another brick of 22 or whatever, or a gun online or what, I'm just throwing it out, it's recording you doing that. Like that photo image is being stored. And I want to tell folks that has been used in criminal prosecutions against people, where there's video record being stored of you engaging in that piece of commerce. Now, I'm not saying not to use your phone. I use my phone. I've used my phone while we've been on air on coffee this morning. I'm just saying be smart about it.
Where does that is that, so is all that stuff going to a data center? Is that where that stuff is getting stored?
So what you're fast finding out is the physical servers, like the Amazon cloud, the AWS system, and all of that. It's not big enough. And Tim, you're more of a technical guy than me. Maybe you can speak to that. But there is so much data that is being generated through the entire world. Physically, it's impossible to store, and that's why you're seeing the rise of these data centers, and the data centers. I mean, the data centers are for control. That's what they are for. It is maybe the biggest advancement toward a true control grid, because I think in real time, in real time all across the world, it's going to be able to compute and track. There's no other way to say it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, and I think it kind of goes back. My own personal opinion is to tie that back into the Bible for people is John 21:25, where it talks about the fact that he said that there were so many things that Jesus did that if everyone should be written down, that even the world itself cannot contain the books that should be written. But I think it's the same thing here. These guys want infinite knowledge. They want infinite on everyone else. And that's why the right to privacy is so important. It's not whether you did something right or wrong or good or bad. God says that if you do bad things that, you know, it'll out. But the point is that is my information. That's who I am, and that's what they want to do. They want to know everything about who I am. You know, they want to know. That's what pre-crime's all about. That's what everything else is all about. They want to be able to. It's nothing more or less than it reminds me of the oracles at Delphi that the Bible talks about and everything else. Those were real places. People came from all over the place to do that. And a lot of people, you know, they think, oh, well, you know, that was just a bunch of, you know, mysticism. And it was, no, there was something there that people believed, or they wouldn't have come from all over to do that. That was satanic information. And this is nothing more than or less than a, you know, product of Satanism and of Antichrist power and worship. There's no other way to cut it. I mean, it's against God.
Going right along with you, Tim, to me, it goes back absolutely to the Garden of Eden. And with God being omnipotent and omniscient, knowing everything about everything. I mean, that's, put that in your brain, that is what God is. God knows everything about everything and everyone. Well, what did the serpent say? You can be like God too. And that is what Lucifer and the Luciferians have been doing since the original temptation of man, is perpetuating the lie and moving and technological speaking, as far as the advancement, to do everything they can to be like God. To be like God. And this is a way, artificial intelligence, these data centers, all of the collection devices that we're talking about as far as the data collection devices, this is a move to know everything about everyone and everything so that they can finally fulfill being like God. That is the move. And that is why, you know, when Moses came down from Sinai directly from his conversation with God and presented the law, the first law was you will have no other God before you. Because our God knew that the Luciferians would build other gods to deceive us. And I think that's what AI is. I think it's a lesser God that the Luciferian Satanists are going to use to convince people that we can be like God too. I mean, you stop and think about just the advancements of the commercially available AI of what we are able to do. I mean, at the beginning of this conversation, we were talking about these 60,000 people invading this community in Spain, and we all agreed we didn't know if it was real or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that is
exactly
the level of deception that we're at now. Anyways.
Well, and I think that given the timing of it is unique as well, too, because basically when we look at the fruits of these things, they just did a study here, and I don't have it in front of me, but they did a study on AI, autonomous AI, and 100% of the time, autonomous AI goes rogue and destroys whatever they put in charge of. 100%. Doesn't matter what brand. Well, isn't that one of the definitions of Satan, is the destroyer? You know, I mean, it's like, so this is his crutch, and it does exactly what he does. And then, of course, we're talking about putting in charge of our military assets. I mean, and we got to compete against China with this, otherwise they'll win. Well, what's the prize? The first country to be totally annihilated by their AI controller? I mean, we would rather not
throw on throw on top of that, Tim, that the very children of Satan, according to Scripture, were partnering with at the time at the pinnacle of AI integrating into the military. So the according to the Book of John, the very children of Satan we are welcoming into our military industrial complex at the dawn of the AI military integration. That probably isn't a good recipe for success.
No. And I think it goes. I think their ideal is that part of the reason they're working so hard on the androids and everything else. And they've made comments on this. You read it in the tech journals. They want to download your consciousness, which, if you think about it, they're already downloading your reality. You know what I'm saying? We just talked about that. Now, who you are, where you go, who you hang out with, what you buy, all these things. And then they want to load it into one of these robotic android bodies. And guess what? They've now created eternal life, you know, as far as by their definition. Not by God's definition, but that's their. I mean, these things sound ludicrous on their surface, but yet we're seeing the physical manifestation of it going on all around us. So, like, I don't think this was what God had in mind.
I saw this week, and this will just be real quick. I don't have the story in front of me. I couldn't come up with it either. I tried to find it, but it was an interesting story having to deal with rare booksellers all across the world. And when I'm talking about rare books, I'm talking about books that are 1,000 years old, that are 500 years old. And, you know, there's obviously people in the world that this is their thing, right? Where they are, that's what they collect. And there's an interesting trend over the last several months that rare booksellers have had more business than ever. And one particular one that I remember, I think the guy was in France, if I remember right, said that in a good month, he would sell 8 to 10 books. and he's now selling 40 to 50 a week.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
And, yeah, and this is a general trend, but here's the funny thing. These are internet sales that are being tracked back to artificial intelligence companies. And the fear here is that these AI companies are buying these ancient texts, downloading them, and then destroying the books so no physical representation of the information is present. And these are books that are selling for $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 at a time. And they're selling that many in a week, 40, 50 a week. And they're shipping them all over the world. And when they really started tracking, trying to figure out where they're shipping them, they have found out that the same, or the book dealers from all over the world are sending them to the same addresses in the United States and in China and Germany and places like this. And that is that's the guess of what's happening, is these are AI companies that are downloading the information so that they will have it to use with AI, but it won't be available to you and I because they're actually physically buying the copies. And we talked about that earlier, is if they possess that information and it's not available anywhere else, they can either keep it from you outright or manipulate it so that it's not accurate information.
Very true.
Wow. That's crazy. Yep. Going back to these phones and stuff, are you guys familiar with any of these Faraday bags that people are using for blocking their phone signals and stuff?
Jason, on my phone right now, I was pulling up Faraday bags for a prepper tip of the week.
Okay, because that's what I already got pulled up. I got there's two companies that I have heard about. And I've watched some videos. Now, I don't have any personal experience with it, but I think I'm going to get I'm going to figure out which one to get. There's several companies that have made in USA ones. Go Dark is one that I've heard good things about. The other one is Faraday O. And there's several of them. It's the other one is off-grid Faraday bags that I've heard good things about, too. They're made in USA also. But I don't know. I think with what we're talking about and everything like that, I think it'd be a good idea to have one of those and, drop your phone in it.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, there's some things to be said about not always having it on. Well, and I think another thing is it's not a bad idea to have a tag over your front-facing camera.
There you go.
Do you really need it? I did have one. I don't have one on there currently, but I have had them in the past. So
I got a phone case that actually has a – you have to slide the deal open to use the camera, so I kind of like that.
I do too. Yeah, on the back camera.
Yeah,
right. I always. Yeah, you fight back.
Tell us about the Faraday bags, Will. What do you know about them?
About as much as you.
Okay.
Right now, that's. Obviously, I know about Faraday cages just from the prepper world and that sort of thing. And Tim, you actually may be able to speak more to, as far as what a Faraday cage or a Faraday bag does.
Well, it just diffuses signals so that it basically interrupts communication between two points. And it can also diffuse things like EMPs. That's actually another advantage to a Faraday bag is if you want to, minimize the EMP involvement. But, yeah, they stop that link. Think of it like, well, really, we talk about tinfoil hats with humor all the time, but that's kind of what it is. It's a Faraday bag for your head, or whatever. But it stops that open communication and basically puts it into a we call them a jug or a bottle, but no signals get in, no signals get out. So.
Well, and I did a little bit of testing with one a couple years ago. I had one that somebody had given me, and it was a small bag. And I thought, okay, this thing. I mean, it looked like something like had a layer of aluminum colored fabric inside of it. And I thought, okay, there's no way that this thing's gonna work. And I had an old cell phone that I don't know, I picked up somewhere, and it was ancient and it had been sitting there for a long time. I made sure the battery was charged and I put it in there, and I threw it in the microwave. And usually you do that to a cell phone, and in about 2 seconds it pops, and it ain't working no more. And it actually worked after pulling it out. It didn't make any change. It didn't affect it. And that made me a believer in these things are actually doing something.
Wow.
No kidding.
Because I've had it where, you know, you turn in a cell phone in or something like that. I don't like, I always have been one of those people that it's like, I don't turn my cell phone in and give it back to, you know, Verizon when I want to get a new one. And it's, you pay the money and you keep it. Or you throw it in the microwave and hit time cook for a minute or two before you do something like that. But I just don't like, I don't like people. And it's like, do you have anything to hide? No, I just don't. I like privacy, and I like to, you know, I don't want anybody else having my information. So anyway, that made me a believer in these bags. And, you know, I think that it's with what we've been talking about, I think it's probably a good day. A good thing to have. And I say, well, let's try to do some research on find a good company, and we'll hopefully have some more information next week on these Faraday bags.
Good idea.
Will do.
Well, we got about 4 minutes left. Closing thoughts, gentlemen.
One more quick. Go ahead, Tim.
No, you go ahead, Will. You got it.
No. I just want to throw out a quick news story since we're talking about this artificial intelligence. I mean, we don't have time to deep dive into it, but Trump made an order where they went out seeking vendors that can use artificial intelligence to revamp the United States military draft and selection and selective service, and they only opened it up for a 3-week window that started this week. So they are looking for people that companies that can use artificial intelligence to revamp the military draft. Just thought that was really interesting.
Wow.
Huh. That sounds like something that ties back in with the new Israel joint coalition with our military. Because isn't military service mandatory in the IDF and in Israel?
It
I
is.
Believe it is. Yeah. So
yep. It is.
And I don't think that's going to play nicely here. Especially given current opinions. I mean, this whole idea, I just read a review on the whole Iranian war, and like 87% of Americans think it's stupid. So, you know, that kind of gives you an idea, of, to me at least, it gives me an idea of what people think about those ideas as far as a draft goes, maybe. Yeah.
I was also, I want to close off. I want to tell people that next newsletter, Dragon Slayer newsletter, is on the presses right now. And I titled it God's Chosen People. And it is, I think it's a good newsletter. And if you are out there listening and would like to receive that free of charge, just make sure and let me know. You can shoot me an email, jason@sfaw.org, and give me your address, and I will make sure that it gets sent to you in the mail. It's it hopefully be shipping it out in the mail later end of next week. But, yeah, I think it's, you know, and I was touching on it, and I actually had my my gunsmith was down here yesterday, and I gave him a copy of it, and he commented that this is one of the things that people need to know. They really need to know who we are. And that's why that's been on my heart, and we've been trying to put that information out. And I think it's a good one, and I think get it if you don't subscribe.
Absolutely.
Amen.
And we are out of time. Thanks for being here, guys.
Thank you.
You bet.